Welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hi, Sondra. How are you this Friday? Are you feeling fresh?
No, I'm not, because I watch so much wrestling and it's very early for me and I haven't slept. But that's okay, because the wrestling I watched was really good. I'm just real tired right now. Real, real tired. So I'm going to try so hard to be coherent. I'm trying really, really hard. It's not easy.
The good thing is now you're like a third of the wrestling that you used to have to watch, you don't need to watch anymore.
That's true. And it has been lovely. Like, I didn't watch SmackDown. I didn't watch Raw. I don't really have any intention of watching SmackDown tonight after work at midnight when I get home. It is liberating.
Well, your health is important.
I need it. Like, I legit have been, like, just, I feel like I'm tied to my television. I don't go out. I don't see people. I mean, like, I go to work. That's the problem, is that I have a job that I have to physically go to. So I can't, like, watch wrestling and do my work. So, yeah, like, there's just not a lot of time in a day. So I needed to cut something out. And cutting out Raw and SmackDown is pleasant.
Well, also, it kind of works better for the podcast, because then Finn and I can cover SmackDown, then Raw on a Tuesday, so we're covering the weekend shows, and then you and I can cover the Wednesday Night Wars, and it means that each one is kind of more succinct. And,
yeah.
You know, there might be an odd week where we swap it around for once in a while, just so, you know, Finn can get a chance to talk about the Wednesday Night Wars, and you can get a chance to, if there's interesting stuff going on Friday and Monday nights.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm still, like, keeping up on what's going on Raw and SmackDown. I mean, that's, like, a little bit of a lie, because I haven't checked a ton of YouTube stuff, but I'm trying to, like, keep up on the main storylines and see who's booked where. Like, right now they're building to Crown Jewel, which I'm not going to watch, so it's difficult for me to really be super invested in what they're doing, because, you know, like, I was hearing that Raw didn't have any women's matches, and I'm not real big fan of that, so that's frustrating. But I mean, like, I'm trying to keep up. I did see Rusev and Bobby Lashley and Lana in a restaurant. I don't understand what's happening.
But you have been keeping up via Dave Meltzer talking about them, which must be just glorious.
I mean, listening to Dave Meltzer discuss the intricacies of the Lana, Bobby Lashley, Rusev situation is pretty glorious.
Yeah, he is. I love when he talks about stuff like that. So we're here today to talk about AEW versus NXT. From last night, week four. So the ratings came in. I know that some people don't care about them, but some people do, so we'll bring it up very quickly. The ratings came in for this week, the October 23rd editions, and NXT had 698,000, down from 712,000, and AEW had 969,000, down from 1.014. So slight dips, but
Didn't sports start?
Yeah, well, can I just read out what I think are some interesting stats? And if you have any thoughts on any of it, just, like, let me know. Because I'm like,
I need to have this stuff explained to me. Like, you read numbers and I'm like, I don't know if that's good. I don't know if that's bad. Well, like, I'm not a ratings person, but I find it interesting when people kind of hold my hand and lead me through.
Well, yeah, because there's actually some really interesting stuff about this week in particular. So, I mean, I'd said before, I think the AEW are probably going to average out around 1 million. And I think that's what it's going to be, because there was the NBA started this week, so NBA were like 1 and 2 in the ratings, but AEW was like the fourth biggest show of the night behind NBA and American Horror Story, so they were number 4. NXT was 21 on there, but there's a couple of things about it that just were pretty interesting. So the World Series had started as well, and the so basically the points that I thought were pretty interesting was that AEW, I don't want to do segment by segment. AEW more than doubled NXT in teenagers and tripled them in 18 to 34. NXT beat AEW by 32% for over 50s, but NXT beat AEW in women's viewership because NXT was strong with teenage girls because of both women's matches that they'd had.
Because NXT has, like, a proper women's division that feels like a thing.
Yeah, they're focusing on it and it's kind of working out through the metrics. So, and then there was another part of it that was pretty interesting in that one of the markets that tends to be really good for AEW was Houston, and Houston was down this week because their team was in the World Series. So obviously, the people in Houston were watching that instead. Dallas also dropped for AEW, the city, because the Dallas Mavericks were having their season opener. So there's like stuff as to why that's gone down, which I think probably explains the dip. I mean, next week will be a test as well. I don't know what games are on next week because I don't follow the real sports. But you know, this was always going to be a tough one for them, but I think overall, like, both of them held up pretty well in terms of what the competition was. Like, NXT still stuck around the 700,000, which is probably going to be where they are. AEW still are around a million, which, well, 969,000. So I feel like they both did pretty well overall.
I mean, that still seems like a decent number of viewers. Like, I'm glad that over a million people are watching wrestling on a Wednesday night. That pleases me. Yeah, like, I mean, I don't follow NBA, so I don't really know what teams or what, like, I would be hard-pressed to tell you most of the teams and what cities they go with, but I know that NBA is big. I know that a lot of people seem to care about the sports, so yeah, well, it makes sense that it would take away viewership.
Well, also, I mean, if you're in, because this stuff kind of fascinates me, because people say, like, ratings don't matter. Ratings are a good indicator of where things are, and, like, you know, NXT doing really strongly with women over AEW makes sense because AEW has not presented as much women's stuff on their show as NXT has on theirs. So, but there was a couple other things I thought were interesting.
One of the things I really wish is that we could see how many people are tuning into NXT the next day, like on the network.
Yes.
Because I would find that fascinating because, like, most people that I know, well, I don't know if I would say most people, but, like, a lot of people that I know are watching both shows. Like, they might be watching AEW first and live because NXT is available so easily on demand and, like, a lot of people have the network anyway. So it's easier to wait to watch NXT and then, you know, just, like, watch it on the network or watch it after. So I don't know, like, I would be fascinated by that and, like, by on-demand numbers. And I guess same for AEW, like, for, like, DVR and those sorts of things that I don't have, but lots of people do. I don't know, like, I think those numbers would be really, really interesting, too, to, like, kind of see how many people are watching both shows. It's just one takes precedence live.
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, this is something that, I guess, it doesn't answer that exact question, but NXT did do an overrun, which AEW did not do, and in the last 8 minutes of the overrun, NXT gained 126,000 viewers.
Okay, so people switched over from AEW, theoretically.
Yeah, so in theory, 126,000 people knew that that was going to be on.
What airs after NXT?
I do not know. I will try and find out. I don't know. What I will say that the last two things, the one thing that's kind of, the reason that people talk about this is that the 18 to 34, 18 to 49 demographic are like the key ones that everybody looks for because they're the people most likely to spend money on you and to, you know, travel to a show or to, you know, we are in that market. You know, we've went to AEW shows and WWE shows because we're in that 18 to 34 just.
For another couple months.
Shush. Demographic. So the AEW are tripling them in 18 to 34 right now. So it seems to be what I was shocked at this before Meltzer had kind of explained it last year that WWE, their audience tends to be over 50 on TV. Like, their biggest audience by far is over 50s.
And which is crazy when you go to the shows because that doesn't really reflect that.
No, not at all. I rarely see people you know, of that age. But the last thing I was going to say that I thought was just kind of interesting was, for a comparison, this time last year in the same time slots, USA Network was doing 755,000 viewers. So NXT's like just under that, but kind of there. Mm-hmm. And TNT were doing 486,000 viewers. So AEW's did about double what TNT used to do at that point. So because I know that the Young Bucks had said in an interview this week that like the projections were 500,000 at the beginning.
Okay. So
I guess they're doing better than they thought they would. But I mean, we were talking about this kind of off air just when we were on Facebook. Like, I saw so many people in the last kind of 24 hours kind of be like really vehemently on one side. Like very, very, and like not understanding or not even trying to comprehend why people might, like if like the people who like AEW are being accused of, oh, you're just bitter about WWE. Or the mm-hmm. people who like NXT have gone, oh, you just don't get it. You know, you don't get the cool thing that's happening right now. And it's like, you said it best, like they're very different shows. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, they're both very different. I mean, like a lot of the stuff that happened on AEW, it wouldn't necessarily work in NXT and vice versa. Like a lot of the stuff that happens in NXT feels very NXT because they're very, I don't know, they're unique programs, they're unique products. I think they're both very good in different ways. Like, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that one person would prefer one over the other. I think they're both top tier quality right now. Like they're both great wrestling shows. And
I will say this for me, I felt like this was by far the week that NXT arrived. I felt like they had, I felt like they, to be honest, and you could probably tell from me talking about last week, I didn't really feel like they'd come to the party yet. I was like, they're still in the Uber trying to get there. But like, for me, like,
I think they're here now.
Because for me, what I wanted was, I like big angles. You know, I like big angles in my wrestling shows. And we hadn't really got that yet. We got the return of Finn Balor, but, you know, it wasn't really followed up at that point. So we were kind of waiting. But what they did in the last kind of 10 minutes of the show was great. It was great, great stuff. And it was exactly what they needed to do. So I'm really happy they've done it because I think there's a lot of people like me who maybe want stuff like that. And to get it, you're just kind of like, this is great. Like, this is what I wanted. And, you know, and now I feel like it's, yeah. So what one do you want to cover first? NXT or AEW?
I mean, I don't really even have a preference. I really enjoyed both shows. Should we talk about NXT? Should we talk about Finn Balor?
Sure, let's talk about NXT. So we'll go through the show chronologically. So we kick off the show with Mauro Ranallo checking in. I got a text from Ollie, which made me laugh. He was like, I fucking hate Beth Phoenix. And I was like, why? And he was like, Nigel McGuinness goes, Beth, what's it like to be in the ring? You've been there. Oh, it's nerve-wracking, Nigel. I was like, but isn't it wracking? But he's just
it
like,
it is nerve-wracking. I love Beth Phoenix. He's just great.
He's got a beaner at his bonnet. I love her jackets.
Her jackets are great. I love how she always posts her blazers on Twitter and stuff.
I think she is getting better. But yeah, so we kick off the show with Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair. Obviously, they'd had the kind of, you know, thing last week. We end up seeing Io Shirai coming in out of nowhere. She hits Ripley with like a 619, and then Candice LeRae runs out. She takes out Io Shirai to kind of equal things, and it allows Rhea Ripley time to hit Bianca with her finish. For the 1-2-3, Rhea Ripley gets the big win, and Candice is kind of clapping at the top of the stage, and Io looks quite sulky. They accomplished a lot here in the first match. What did you make of the opener?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I was expecting to love Rhea Ripley versus Bianca Belair, and I was not disappointed. I thought it was really interesting on commentary. They were talking about like comparing the two women, and they kept saying that Bianca Belair might be more polished and she might have more like technical skill or refinement, and Rhea Ripley is just a powerhouse. And I'm like, dude, have you seen Bianca Belair in the combine? Like, she wins the combine all the time because she's so strong. It's ridiculous. But I mean, seeing the two of them go at it was awesome, and it's a match we haven't seen before, which is really cool too. I loved the interference stuff too. I think they were really clever on commentary to point out the ref didn't see Io Shirai's interference because I think the ref's back was turned or there was chaos or something like that. So I thought it was all timed quite well, and I think they did accomplish a lot. Like, they have now an interaction with Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley. They kind of had Io call out Bianca and Rhea anyway, so it seems like she could get you know, involved in this kind of thing. And I figured that it was going to be like when EO came out, I figured, oh, okay, it's going to be a disqualification and then it's going to turn into a triple threat for next week or something. And that'll be the number one contendership match, which would have been fine. Like that would not have been a bad way to go. But I think giving Rhea Ripley the win here and setting up a fresh match because we haven't seen, well, I mean, we saw Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler, but it didn't end, right? Like it ended in DQ. So having Rhea Ripley be the number one contender and a woman that Shayna hasn't been able to beat is a great story. And I think, you know, Bianca Belair has had her title shot before. Io Shirai's been in the title picture before too. So I don't know. Like I like what it sets up, and it feels like all of the women kind of circling the title belong there. Like they belong in the main event scene and they belong in title contention. And it feels like a fully formed world to me because everybody wants this really prestigious prize.
Yeah, it does. You know, what I'd kind of like to see going forward with Rhea Ripley especially is some promo work to kind of develop her character, because I feel like Bianca Belair, she just kind of, like, the character's there. Like, it's already there. You pretty much are good to go. I feel like with Rhea, I don't know, I'd like to see a little bit more from her, like, what's her agenda? Is she, like, you know, I just like to see more from her. So, because she's a good promo. I liked when she was on the mic last week, and I kind of like the idea that they can either go down the route of her being a bully, or they can go down the route of her being a badass. I just like to see more from her, so I'm hoping we get
that's
to see
that. That's fair. I mean, I think I still have a lot of goodwill toward her character from when she was in Mae Young Classic, and, you know, when Tegan Knox got injured and she handled herself so well, right? Like, she just was an absolute dickhead, and she was just like, yep, I broke your leg, or what, not broke her leg, but, you know, like, I made your leg explode in a match and I won and I got to be great. And a lot of the funny stuff that she was doing on Twitter, like mocking Tegan Knox, which, I mean, like, that injury sucked for her. Like, it absolutely sucked for her. But I think it just led to some brilliant Rhea Ripley stuff, and I want to see a little bit more of that side of her come out again.
Yeah, so I mean, the match was really good though, really strong. It was, again, it kind of, the clever thing they're doing is they are blowing AEW out of the water in terms of the women's stuff.
Oh,
not,
yeah.
Not the AEW stuff is bad. It's just, you know, this is miles ahead in terms of in-ring and all that kind of stuff. So,
really,
well,
this feels a lot more, I don't know, it just feels a lot better than AEW stuff. Like, on AEW, we'll talk about it, but, like, Britt Baker versus Jamie Hayter was fine-ish, but, like, I don't know. Like, it didn't really have much of a connection to it, whereas I thought this was awesome. Like, this.
Well, also, I mean, you can argue that the NXT women's title is maybe the best booked WWE championship of the last 5 years.
Yeah, I think there's a strong argument to be made for that.
So, you know, it makes sense that when people are fighting over that, you buy it. It's not like one where you go, oh, yeah, 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 they want to be intercontinental champion. You know, it's not that. It's, you buy it. You know, I would fight to not have the United States championship. But, like,
it does seem like more of a liability.
Yeah.
Remember when the Intercontinental title seemed to be the cursed one?
What a time.
And I wanted to throw it into the sun. And then Dolph Ziggler won it, and I wanted to throw them both into the sun.
And then it weirdly got good for a while. It was odd. Very odd time.
I know, it was strange.
Kathy Kelly's interviewing Pete Dunne, who comes along with Tyler Bate. He says that, you know, Damian Priest is going to get a receipt for what he did last week. But, you know, about the Kelly and Dane attack, he said he doesn't really care about Dane. What I loved about this was that Tyler Bate looked like he won a competition to be an extra.
He really did, and he came across that way too. It was like, ooh, I get to have a line.
Oh, I get to do a wee smile to camera. He was, oh, it's adorable.
It's adorable, but, like, so this is something that I've thought for a while. Like, you know how much I love Pete Dunne in the ring. I think he's a badass. I think he's amazing. I love when he breaks people's fingers. The whole deal is just 100% for me, right? I think he's real terrible every time he has to speak.
He's one of those people who he definitely needs to have a mouthpiece. Like, if you're going, if he's going to, like, get to the next level, because, you know, it's funny, Stephen Ross had said on a post about the Balor turn, he said, you know, my hope is that, you know, Balor doesn't go from being smiley Irish man to frowny Irish man, and there's, like, development. And I think that's a good point, in that there's some of what you maybe lose through just dealing with really good wrestling is not dealing with good character development. So with Pete Dunne, I think he's just one of those guys where I've interviewed him like 7 times. He's lovely, but I just think he needs a mouthpiece.
Yeah, I mean, everything he says is like fine, but in this promo segment, he just looked kind of bored, like he didn't want to be there. And I think that's generally how he comes across in interview segments. Like, the most effective Pete Dunne interviews are the ones where he just kind of like sneers at you and then walks away, right? Because I don't know, there's something about him and speaking that just don't go together in front of a camera. And that, like, he still works for me. Like, I don't need to hear long form Pete Dunne interviews. I don't really even want to hear long form Pete Dunne interviews, but I don't know. And I don't think Tyler Bate is like amazing on the microphone either, at least not from what they've presented in NXT. So it's not really their strength.
Let's alert CNN to that one. I mean, that's the travesty, isn't it? I feel like Trent Seven must sometimes go look at Tyler Bate and go, if I had your body, if I had your body, I'd be main event in WrestleMania.
And he would be too.
We got Matt Riddle taking on Cameron Grimes next, and they only went about like 6 minutes, but this is maybe my favorite Matt Riddle match so far.
Like that, it was definitely my favorite Cameron Grimes match that I've seen.
This really worked for me. I mean, there was points where it was very difficult to not look at Cameron Grimes' weird sort of thigh hair that was like very near the pant line, which was
problematic. It is a whole situation.
But this was great. This was like Riddle's the established name, Grimes the guy coming up, Grimes is doing everything he can to beat him, Riddle can't quite beat Grimes. This is really, really good. And when Riddle beat him, it didn't feel like Grimes lost a thing. And that's the thing, if you can beat somebody and have them look good in defeat, then you've kind of done your job.
I think we've talked, and I know that we've talked on this podcast before about how Cameron Grimes hasn't really connected with me. Not that anything he's been doing has been bad, but he's just not one of like the guys that I knew coming in. So I haven't paid as much attention to his stuff. This made me pay attention to him. Like, this was incredible. He went from dude who wears a hat to like, oh, wrestler who's super badass, I think, in this match. Like, it was always obvious that he was a very good wrestler, but you said this was about 6 minutes. I would have said it was longer, but not in a bad way, because I think they just accomplished so much. Like, it felt like a really hard-hitting, really great match. I loved this. Like, this was incredibly effective at making both of them look super good. Like, I kind of just figured that it was going to be... I mean, they've been pushing Cameron Grimes quite a bit, so I didn't think it was going to be a squash or anything, but it was very much like, you know, Cameron Grimes is the guy on his way up. Matt Riddle is Matt Riddle, and he tends to win. So, I don't know, like... There was a little bit of doubt in my mind once the match started looking pretty even. I was like, are they going to have Cameron Grimes beat Matt Riddle? Is that actually going to happen? Are they really all in on this guy? And I got really super invested in it. I thought this was awesome.
It was a ton of fun. I think my favorite Matt Riddle match. So,
Just some of their like counters and transitions and stuff were brilliant. Like, it worked really well in terms of presenting both of them and their wrestling styles, I think. And then, like, as someone who does love just like really fucking good wrestling, it was awesome.
Then we had after the match, we saw Tyler Bate end up basically punching at Cameron Grimes for being an arsehole. So we might get Bate and Grimes, which I'm sure they'd have a great match.
I'm here for it. I think it'll be good. Like, now that I'm a lot more interested in Cameron Grimes, I'm like, yes, I want to see him fight more people and also have a hat.
When I said like 3 months ago, was it 3 months ago when Tyler Breeze came back and fought Velveteen Dream?
I'm very bad at the passage of time, but I remember when it happened.
It was like the SummerSlam takeover, right?
I think so.
Anyway, I was like, I hope that they do something different, and Tyler Breeze and Fandango have won me over again. This Top Gun entrance was everything. It was the best.
Gosh, it was so brilliant, wasn't it? It was so good. Like, I loved their construction entrance from, was that last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever that was? Uh-huh. I thought that was brilliant too, but the Top Gun entrance topped it. Like, it was amazing, and I love Top Gun, so like, this is right up my alley. But
when you can dress up as somebody from a movie that Sondra has seen, like, it's very rare to get that.
It's true. Like, I have not seen all that many films, but Top Gun I've seen a number of times, and I really enjoy that film. So yes, I loved this. I thought it was great. I love the whole like kind of running gag that Fandango keeps getting distracted by the ladies in the entrance. I love Beth Phoenix and her very innocent explanation of grabbing the throttle needing to go faster, and Nigel McGuinness just saying, you know, everything goes over your head, Beth. I think all of it, the whole presentation just works for me, and they seem to be having fun with it, right? Like, how long has it been since we've seen Tyler Breeze and Fandango just have fun with something? It's really been since the Fashion Police segments that they were doing. And then they were just off TV for so long, and you could tell they were unhappy. Like, this is just so much fun. It's great. I love it. It's campy and ridiculous.
They teamed up with Isaiah Swerve Scott against the Forgotten Sons. I realize the Forgotten Sons are like the WWE's version of Dark Order.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, I just don't get them.
Sorry, I was yawning. I was thinking about the Forgotten Sons. But, you know, the weird thing is I really enjoyed this match, and I feel like I'm starting to enjoy Dark Order more, too, on AEW. I think the Forgotten Sons are actually sort of becoming effective. Like, I hate them. I really hate them. I don't want to see them win ever. I love seeing Tyler Breeze and Fandango and Isaiah Swerve Scott just beat the shit out of them. But I'm kind of like, yeah, I kind of want to see them get beat up a little bit more. Like, I would maybe prefer anyone else in that spot, but at least the match is good.
Yes, the match was fun. We ended up seeing the babyfaces getting the win, so that was nice. What do you think?
I think Isaiah Swerve Scott got to like really show what he was made of. Like, he's been given a couple matches lately, and I think he's been killing it. Like, I mean, I was a fan of him in Lucha Underground, so I knew that he was really, really good. But I don't know. Like, I feel like in this match, he more than Tyler Breeze or Fandango was featured. Same thing as like when they teamed with Kushida. And Kushida got to get the pin on the Forgotten Sons. Like, Tyler Breeze and Fandango are kind of like the supporting characters to help build other stars, but not in a bad way where they get forgotten. You know, they're not going to be the Forgotten Sons. So I don't know. I thought the dynamic of all of it worked too, because Isaiah Swerve Scott is someone who still kind of has to show what he's made of to the NXT audience because they're not as familiar with him. And I think him getting to get quite a bit of shit in and just be like awesome and super flippy, and I don't understand how humans like him can defy the laws of physics in ways that they do. I don't know. I thought he looked really, really good, and him getting the pin made sense to me.
Yeah, it was good. I hope that with Isaiah Scott, they do. Remember when Roderick Strong had those vignettes that really kind of won people over on him? I think Scott needs these because, you know, NXT is not in its shortage of having great wrestlers. Like, there are loads of them. It's the characters that we need. So I hope that he can do some sit-down stuff and give us his story or give us what the character's motivations are going to be. And because he's got the wrestling down easy and the crowd like him, so I'm keen to sort of learn more about him.
Yeah, for sure. I think sit-down interviews would be great.
Leo Rush is going to be on commentary for the next match. He still has a purple belt, even though it's now going to be on NXT. So, okay, cool.
Purple and yellow are my favorite color combination, so I'm okay with it. Plus, I really like the Cruiserweight title. I think it's pretty.
Okay, so we have Angel Garza taking on Gentleman Jack Gallagher. Angel Garza gets the win in about 4 minutes. Gallagher makes him look really good. So Garza and Leo Rush were kind of jawjacking each other, so maybe that's going to be a match coming up. Garza is really good. We've seen that a few times in recent matches in NXT, and we know Leo Rush is good, so I have high hopes for this matchup.
I have the highest hopes for this. I think this is great. I mean, I miss Drew Gulak a lot. A lot, a lot, a lot. But Leo Rush is our champion now. And I think he has done a very good job of being likable. I really enjoy Jack Gallagher versus Angel Garza, because I think Jack Gallagher is a very developed character on, you know, on 205 Live in the Cruiserweight kind of area of the world. Division is the word that I couldn't think of there because I'm so tired. But Jack Gallagher is someone who's established and we know him. And Angel Garza has been kind of like Isaiah Swerve Scott in the previous match. Like, he has been making himself known. Like, I think he's come across really well in terms of personality and character, and building that is a good idea. Like, obviously Angel Garza is the one that's on the way up. Poor Jack Gallagher, like, he doesn't really get title shots very often, even though he's super, super good. But yeah, like, this all made sense to me. I thought the match was super fun, and I want to see more of Angel Garza. Like, I am so here for Angel Garza versus Leo Rush, because they're both kind of cocky, and they're both good on the microphone, and they're both good at just kind of, I don't know, being characters. So I'm kind of here for that as a Cruiserweight title feud. I think it could be real, real good.
And I'm sure that we're going to see that in the next couple of weeks. We then had a match that William Regal had announced earlier. It's Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai taking on Marina Shafir and Jessamine Duke of the Horse Ladies, with the winners facing Asuka and Kairi Sane next week. Not surprisingly, Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai got the win here. I thought that Shafir and Duke looked a lot better than they have before. So I feel like they are improving. And Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai against a heel Asuka and Kairi Sane is like a dream.
The dream.
It's going to be so good.
I'm so excited. Going into this, I was afraid that they were going to give Marina Shafir and Jessamine Duke the win, which would have been the wrong decision. I agree with you. I think they do look better. I think they are improving. I mean, they haven't been doing professional wrestling all that long, so they're not going to be incredible. This did feel a little bit basic, like just in terms of, you know, they can't do a whole bunch, but I think Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai are so good that they led them through like a fine match. I don't think it was incredible, but I think it was fine. And there were some fun shenanigans, and I know, like, it wasn't horrible or anything, but I'm so glad that Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox won, because, I mean, like you say, them versus the Kabuki Warriors, I am so here for it. Like, Team Kick versus the Kabuki Warriors is going to absolutely rock. And I loved Asuka and Kairi Sane's little, like, promo afterwards, where they just talk shit in Japanese for a little while, and then they're like, we're going to beat you. Yeah. I love the fact that William Regal set this up as a match that had stakes, right? Like, Dakota Kai and Marina Shafir, or Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox, rather, have reason to be annoyed with Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke for, like, being dickheads with Shayna and coming out and interrupting Tegan Nox after her big comeback last week. So there was a storyline to set up a tag match anyway, but I love that William Regal made it for the number one contendership, because that A, brings the women's tag titles to NXT when it is supposed to be defended across all brands, and this makes sense, right? Like, you need to actually bring it to NXT every once in a while if that's going to be your stipulation of the titles. And I mean, also it made this match have stakes, and then it also set up future television. It's all really smart. It's good stuff.
Yeah, because obviously Bayley and Sasha had said they were going to defend the titles in NXT, and I don't know, Tegan and Dakota against Asuka and Kairi is like, it's one of those matches you didn't really know that you needed, but when you get sort of teased with it, you're like, yes, 100%. If Asuka does not throw mist into the face of poor Dakota Kai, what are we even doing here? Why are we alive?
Right? Like, I mean, life would just have no meaning without that. Like, I love the fact that in Asuka's promo, too, like, now she just has green dripping from her eyes and her mouth. She's like, yep, I'm all in on the green mist thing, and it's great. I love her.
Asuka, again,
I love all of this.
Is the best. Asuka is the best. Asuka, number one. their post-match promo was really good. I think that tag match should main event next week.
Oh, 100% it should main event next week. Well, what else is on the card for next week?
I don't know. I should know this. I will look up as we're talking about the main event. So then we had the main event, which is obviously the three-way with Keith Lee, Dominik Dijakovic, and Roderick Strong for the North American Championship. Talk me through the match. Talk me through, you know, your favorite bits of it, the decision to have Roderick Strong come out on top, and what did it do or not do for the people involved?
I loved this match. I thought it was incredible. I mean, Roderick Strong looked kind of like the underdog, I guess, against Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic. But I think the way they laid it out was really smart, because they had Roderick Strong kind of get out of their way a bunch of the time. And not to the point where it felt like he was just taking a nap and it was a singles match, but it felt like he was very strategically letting Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic beat the shit out of each other, because that's what they do, right? So when Roderick Strong gets the win at the end, it really felt like he had stolen it, because it felt, I think Moro even said on commentary, it felt like stolen valor, because he wasn't the one that really like beat them up and did all of the work, right? Like, he basically pitted them against each other so that he could come in and steal the win and like kick Keith Lee in the face and pin him. So I don't know, like, I thought they worked really well together. Obviously all three of these guys are super, super talented. It is very impressive seeing Keith Lee throw Dominik Dijakovic and Roderick Strong around, like double suplexing them and doing all sorts of crazy things. Like, Keith Lee throwing Roderick Strong around makes sense, because Roderick Strong is much smaller than Keith Lee, but Keith Lee throwing both of them around at once is just insane. Like, he is such a strong, ridiculous man. Like, he is a ridiculous man who is so good at wrestling, and I want to see more of him. Roderick Strong, like, I would have preferred that he pinned Dominik Dijakovic, just because I'm like more on Keith Lee's side, I guess, is what I'm finding. but whatever. Like, I thought that everyone in this match was awesome. I kind of had an inkling that Roderick Strong was going to win. It just kind of seemed like it would have been weird to put it on one of them, but I didn't know. So I don't know. It was exciting. Like, I thought it could have been anyone's match to win, and it was awesome, and I loved it, and the wrestling was great. I don't know. What did you think?
It was a great match. The crowd loved it. I know Shawn Michaels was tweeting out about Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic sort of praising them. It's like he's working quite closely with them. They were really great in this. They got a standing ovation at one point. So I think they're more of a slow build. So, like, for me, this match isn't going to make me go, I love them, but it's going to make them sort of slowly be in my mind more and more and more. I think they're a long-term build. But the finish was so clever, because when Keith Lee does the kind of super spirit bombing, it's called, and then just as he lands, Roderick Strong kicks him in the face and pins him. It was like, it was believable that he did it quick enough that it could stun you enough to pin you. It wasn't, you know, sometimes in wrestling they do this whole like, oh, somebody came out of nowhere, but it like takes 20 seconds. It was done really crisply and really quickly, and I think that was a key to why it was so good. And Roderick Strong,
there were so many moments in this match where timing was key, right? Like, if their timing would have been off by like a fraction of a second, it would have gone wrong. Like, there was the one part where Dominik Dijakovic jumps as though he's gonna, I think, do a head scissors on Keith Lee, but Keith Lee catches him, but then Roderick Strong like kicks them through the ropes and all that stuff. Like, that's a lot of stuff to keep straight, and if your timing's off on that, it's gonna look like shit, but it looked awesome because they're so good at their jobs.
And the decision to have Roderick Strong win, I think, was the right one, because Undisputed Era having all the gold is a really good, like, visual. So, yeah, solid, solid, solid. But for me, the real glory was post-match, because, you know, it was like, they've had all these great matches and great matches and great matches, but then they did the big angle. They have the Undisputed Era all kind of putting the boots to Keith Lee, holding up the titles. Tommaso Ciampa comes out with his signature crutch. He's going to try and take them all on. Crowd are chatting, Daddy's home. Johnny Gargano comes out. The crowd are chatting, DIY, going crazy. And as they're about to face off against the Undisputed Era, Finn Balor came out. He stands beside them. Now, WWE could have done this, the tired cliche trope of having Finn Balor just be, you know, teaming with Gargano and Ciampa to go up against the Undisputed Era. But instead, they did the heel turn. Finn Balor did a brilliant Pele kick, which just looked amazing to Johnny Gargano.
It was so good.
Undisputed Era then beat up Ciampa, and Finn Balor killed Johnny Gargano. And there was, I don't know if you hear it, but if you go back and watch it, there's a bit where you can hear a woman in the crowd shouting, "Go straight to hell!" to Balor. And that's like a sign of how good it was. So Finn Balor is a heel. I think we're going to get a heel Finn Balor against a babyface Johnny Gargano. So,
here for it. That's going to be so good.
This angle was brilliant. It was executed to perfection. NXT have arrived on the USA Network. I'm so happy. And I thought the angle was just 10 out of 10. What did you think?
I thought it was executed so, so well. Like, so well. And I still have questions, too. Like, has Finn Balor actually joined the Undisputed Era? Or is he just on side with them against Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa for some reason that we don't really understand? Is it because Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano get all the attention in NXT, and Finn Balor used to get all the attention in NXT, and now he's jealous? Because, like, if you notice at the end, Undisputed Era, like, after they were beating up Tommaso Ciampa for quite a while, they all stood together and did their little pose thing, all four of them in the ring. Finn Balor wasn't with them. Like, he didn't pose with them. He was up on the ramp still just wearing his, you know, black shirt and black pants and looking stellar. Like, he kind of was staring back at them, but he wasn't joining them outright. It wasn't like, I am now in the Undisputed Era. Whereas when Roderick Strong turned on Pete Dunne back at that takeover, he very clearly joined Undisputed Era. He put on the armband. He was like, yep, I'm all in on Undisputed Era. I have questions about Finn Balor's allegiances. I have questions about, if Finn Balor is with the Undisputed Era, how is he going to take to following Adam Cole? I don't think he's going to take that very kindly, right? Like, unfortunately, I did have this spoiled for me. Because, because I was offline. I was off the internet. I was not scrolling through anything. And then one of my friends sent me a picture of Finn Balor, and it said, like, fuck the kids, I think. It was, I don't know, a meme that was going around. And I was like, I bet you just spoiled something in NXT. I was like, I bet he turns heel. I bet he joins Undisputed Era. Is right. That went through my head. And I was like, if you just spoiled NXT for me, I'll not be happy. And sure enough. So that was disappointing that I found out despite all of my cautions of being offline. But it is what it is, I suppose. And
who, when they know you, like, thinks that it's a good idea to...
I don't know. Say, I don't understand.
Like, honestly, like, have a brain.
I know. I was not very happy. I expressed my displeasure with the moment.
Like, you have given me into trouble for talking about something on a podcast.
Uh-huh.
Which, I'm like, well, I don't even really got a case there. But, like, when somebody just tweet, like, DMs you about it. Like, I mean, I now what I tend to do is see if I'm ever, like, if I'm ever, like, getting up on, like, a Thursday morning or a Tuesday morning. Well, not really a Tuesday anymore because, you know, you feel soul destroyed. But, like, most of the time, if I get up on a morning, I'll even if I open my DMs, I'll, like, kind of, like, quickly glance at the name. And I'll be like, if that's, like, Ollie or somebody, I might not read it till later. Because, just in case. But, yeah. But, I mean, thumbs up show for sure, right?
Oh, thumbs up show for sure. And, like, I love that I have so many questions coming out of this. And now, like, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa seem to be kind of on side with one another, but they haven't really, like, rejoined, right? Like, they just have a common enemy. So that's interesting, too, because DIY reuniting, not reuniting. We don't really know what's going on there.
Can we all, like, put money into a Kickstarter to, like, not have War Games at War Games?
Oh, my gosh. Wouldn't that be incredible? I would love that so much.
Because I'm like, I mean, War Games might end up being like Keith Lee, Dominic Dijakovic, Velveteen Dream, and Ciampa against Undisputed Era, and then Balor and Gargano separate, I guess.
Maybe I'm yawning again. I'm thinking about War Games. Yeah, I don't want to have a War Games match at all. I keep forgetting that it's NXT Takeover War Games, and like, I don't know. That almost helps. With my, like, because I'm still going back and forth as to whether or not to go. And, like, the fact that it's the War Games Takeover is, like, making me lean toward not going and not taking off work for that night because I don't like War Games. And I know a lot of people love War Games and, like, more power to you, but...
When do you have to decide?
Probably in the next week or two.
Well, wait another, like, 10 days. Wait till, like, the post-Crown Jewel Raw and SmackDown, because that'll be when it tells you the main matches for the main roster. And by that point, you'll know roughly where NXT's going.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figure. Like, and if, like, if my friend needs an answer sooner, then I don't know. Like, I'll just figure something out. But it's, I don't know, like, War Games is just always such a bummer. But, like, I love the direction that NXT is taking, and I love... I don't know, Finn Balor as a heel, I've always heard that Prince Devitt was incredible as a heel. Like, I remember Bob DeGrand would always tell me, like, Finn Balor was his favorite wrestler in New Japan. And he was like, you are going to love Prince Devitt. Like, once he turns heel, he's going to be, like, the absolute best. And we haven't seen it yet. Like, we've not seen a heel Finn Balor, so this is new to us. And he's been in WWE since 2014, it is, I think. So it's been like 5 years of babyface Finn Balor, and it's been to varying degrees of success. I am so excited for what's coming. And I think the eventual like power dispute between him and Adam Cole could be really, really good. And yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, so let's move on to AEW. AEW coming from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They opened the show cold with Private Party and the Lucha Brothers in the ring, ready to fight in the semifinals of the AEW Tag Team Title Tournament. These guys had an insane match, which I think really helped Private Party kind of establish themselves as a team. Private Party are kind of like, in some ways, they're like Bianca Belair, and that they kind of, when you see them, you kind of get the gimmick. Like, it's there. It's a very like visual gimmick. Private Party, they're like two young guys who like to party. They're cool, you know. Bianca Belair, she's kind of similar. Like, you get the gimmick. So they've kind of got the gimmick halfway there. Lucha Brothers are just an amazing tag team. So this was always going to be great. It was, I mean, ideally, if it was up to me, would I have liked a little bit more selling to spots? Yes, 100%. But I thought the match was super fun, and I'm glad that the Lucha Brothers went through. I thought they were the right choice to go through. And Private Party, again, kind of similar to the Riddle and Grimes match in NXT, that I don't think Private Party lost a thing in losing the match. What did you make of the match, and were Lucha Brothers the team that you think should have gone through?
Yeah, Lucha Brothers 100% should have gone through. They're great. They're awesome. They're incredible. Private Party, like, I haven't seen tons of Private Party before. I know they were on, like, the pre-show of one of the pay-per-views, right? And I don't think I ever actually watched that match, but I heard it was great. Like, again, there's so much wrestling and so little time.
Sandra, one of their finishing moves is called the Gin and Juice.
Which I love. I love, 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 love. Like, I think that's great. And I think you're right. Like, they do exude charisma. And they just kind of, I don't know, you get them when you see them. And I think that this match, and I mean, they beat the Young Bucks, in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
So I think them beating the Young Bucks in the first round was a big step in establishing them. I think that was a big deal. And like, if they would have beaten the Lucha Brothers, it would have been kind of a cool underdog story. But I think the Lucha Brothers are... like, they're just so incredible. Like, they shouldn't be losing to Private Party at this point, but Private Party showed that they can hang, you know, like, they can absolutely come and they can come to the party and hang out with the good people. Yeah, this was awesome. This was so, so good. I loved it.
So yeah, great opener. And then the interesting choice to go straight into the other semi-final match. What did you make of that choice to have it, not spread it throughout the show and just go straight into it? Good, bad, what?
I had not thought about it until right now. It's fine. It didn't bother me, I suppose. It was okay with me. I didn't really notice.
I think the good thing about it is that you kind of, you're immediately thinking, right, who are the Lucha Brothers facing? And then you think, dear God, please don't let it be Dark Order. So we got SCU versus Dark Order. This one, again, was a really fun match. Scorpio Sky is such a star. And SCU, thank God, got the win. But there's some crazy spots in this match. It's a shame because Dark Order are really good wrestlers, but aesthetically, they make me want to throw up.
I'm kind of starting to be into it. Like, I don't know. I like Dark Order now. I think this match helped me like them a lot more. And, I mean, SCU, I think, are the correct decision in terms of who should win. But, like, I don't know. Dark Order, the more I see them wrestle, the more I'm kind of a fan.
But do you think their aesthetic looks good?
I think their aesthetic looks different. I don't think it's...
That's not like an answer, Sandra.
No, but it's starting to work for me. Like, I don't know. Like, objectively, is it good? No. Do I understand what they're doing? I think so. And it's fine.
It's funny because, like, they're just this team where, like... You know that way, like, there's people you go, I get it. I get it, I get it. I don't get it. And I think the problem is, like, the idea of the gimmick is so good. Like, they're the Dark Order, and they have these weird little men in masks who work for them. It shouldn't be
shit. I mean,
it's
definitely an underdeveloped concept. Like, it needs to be balls-to-the-wall crazy if they want to have it be, like, really supernatural and have all their minions and all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't think it's well-developed at this point.
No, it is not. But SCU get the big win. People are very happy to see that. They did mention in commentary that Christopher Daniels will be back in about 6 weeks. Got a pinched nerve after the match from after the attack last week. Then we got Joey Janela taking on Kenny Omega in a rematch from their match on AEW Dark. I really liked in commentary how Tony Schiavone... By the way, I fucking love Tony Schiavone in commentary. But
he's great.
I loved how he talked about, like, Janela and talked about, you know, you'd be mistaken to kind of think that he doesn't, that he's not a good wrestler and he's just a hardcore wrestler. But Janela can wrestle. And, like, I felt like the commentary of Tony Schiavone was helping me get Janela more. So I really feel that he was really good in this match at helping get Janela over to people who maybe haven't seen him as much.
Yeah, I think so too. And I thought it was kind of a weird decision to have the rematch just like right away the next week. I wasn't really sure why they were having a rematch right away the next week. So that was kind of strange. But I mean, it was great. Of course, it was great. It was Kenny Omega and Joey Janela. I can't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast before or if I've just read it. But like, I think a couple months ago, I saw someone online say, like, compare Joey Janela to Mick Foley and say that the people who disparaged Joey Janela like would have been the same people to like shit on Mick Foley joining WWF and say that he's not worth anything. And ever since I read that comparison, I can't get it out of my head because I think they are very similar in terms of their career path. Like Joey Janela has been working at this for a long time. And, you know, like he made his name doing crazy shit, like jumping off a roof and having hardcore matches and all that kind of stuff. But he's a really good wrestler too, and a really good character, and he like clearly connects to an audience. So I just thought that was like an interesting comparison.
Well, I mean, for me, I've not seen that yet, but then I don't really know a lot about him. And all I've really seen is guy who takes his boot off and puts pins in his feet. Like, that's well, not...
I mean, that would be like when Mankind came into WWF. Like, did you see what he was right away? Like, did anyone like, get him right away before those JR interviews?
Well, yeah, because the character was there straight away. You know, he was the first guy to beat The Undertaker. He had this mandible claw. He had different entrance and exit music. I feel like Foley was more obvious. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying Foley was more obvious, whereas so far I've not seen it with Joey Janela. But listen, I want to see more from him. I want to see more character stuff and see what his character is. Because that's one of the things that we've said about AEW that they do need to work on, is sort of like developing, like, if you don't know about a character, like getting to know them more.
Yeah, because I think AEW definitely has the same problem as NXT has had in the past, where they're bringing in people from all over and they just expect that you know them. And a lot of them I do know, and so it's awesome, and I don't need a ton of explanation for someone like, I don't know, Orange Cassidy or Chuck Taylor or whoever, because I know who they are and I've been watching their careers for a long time. But not everyone has, and they need more explanation. And like what you're saying about Joey Janela is a good point. Like, I haven't seen the beginning of Mankind's WWF career, so I just don't know.
But you are right. Because, I mean, even though it was there with Foley straight away, because the thing is, the difference here is, like, Janela has been signed to the company and he's, you know, he did a really good match with Omega on Dark, so they put it on the main show. Whereas, like, when Foley came in, it was like, we're going to bring you in and beat our top guy straight away in, like, three consecutive matches and have his manager turn on him and go with you. So, like, with Foley, you kind of, you had to get him because he was, like, a top priority. Whereas Janela at the moment is kind of like a mid-card guy, but I want to see what his gimmick is, what his character is. I don't really know a lot about him character-wise, but he's someone who you can see he's got a swagger, he's got a charisma to him. So I hope we get to see more from him.
Yeah, I mean Kenny Omega's great, and we know that Kenny Omega's great. And like I think I prefer the Dark match, like the AEW Dark match, which was just crazier, right? Like, and I think they did a pretty decent job of explaining, hey, these guys like pretty much killed each other and now they're going to have a wrestle. It was a little weird going from like crazy match with all of the crazy spots to like a wrestling match, but I think it showed that they can do both.
Yeah, and I feel quite redundant because I feel like with a lot of people I'm saying, I want to see more from them, but I do for both. You
it's
know,
the theme of the show, though.
But for both companies, like, you know, because with NXT, it's like you've been on the network for ages. With AEW, you're just starting. So they're, but both in different ways. Like, if you're going on this big platform, people need to know who the characters are. So they need, you know, that needs to be explained. So,
well, and I think it's a good sign that you want to see more instead of like, I don't know who this person is and I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Up next, we got my favorite part of the show. I just thought it was tremendous, was Tony Schiavone brings out Cody. Cody, we should mention, sort of the Inner Circle were in a luxury box earlier in the show. Chris Jericho, Santana Ortiz, and Sammy Guevara. Jake Hager was not there because Jake Hager has a fight this weekend with Bellator, so that's why he wasn't there. So Jericho is basically, like, they start using air horns to try and interrupt Cody, who was apparently supposed to be making an announcement. We don't get the announcement. Cody makes like a dig about WWE, saying this isn't the other company, there's not invisible walls, I can come up there and fight you. Jericho tries to goad him, Cody's about to come, but then we see Dustin Rhodes come out, MJF come out, DDP come out to sort of even the odds. At one point Jericho says about MJF, who even wears a scarf anyway?
Which that was just so good.
Oh my god, Jericho is just, he is absolutely at the top of his game. And then the crew run up to take them on. Jericho locks them in a room, and then MJF puts Cody's hand wrapped in his scarf, punches through the plexiglass, and they all brawl through the stands. It was phenomenal.
This was awesome. This was so good. It was so, so good. Like, I keep saying, like, Chris Jericho just gets better and better and better, and it's insane. Like, it is insane how good he is at his job. And I think Cody is just so incredibly likable in AEW, right? Like, he's, even though he's the guy who's kind of in charge, and it's easy to hate that guy. Like, he shouldn't be as likable as he is, but he just comes across really, really well, and you want to see him prevail. Like, you don't want to see him get beaten up by this dastardly Chris Jericho and this evil little, like, group that he has that's just being annoying pricks. Like, they are those douchebag frat guys who are just, like, using air horns and being like, we're better than you bitches. Like, I hate them. I actively hate them, and it's great. And, like, Chris Jericho just even making a comment about a scarf. He's so self-referential and gets it. Like, he just gets professional wrestling, and he gets who he is and what he has to be. And, like, I don't know, the whole dynamic works. I thought the brawl was brilliant. I thought them brawling into the stands felt organic and not contrived. Like, because, you know, sometimes stands brawls and, like, big things like this work, and sometimes they just kind of feel contrived. This was awesome. Like, this just, I don't know. Like, I want to see them get their hands on each other. I'm really excited for Cody versus Chris Jericho. And that's a match that, like, I'm sure I've seen that match, right? Like,
probably,
Cody Rhodes,
yeah,
and
probably.
Chris Jericho. Stands to reason that that's something I've seen at some point in time. I can't recall at this point, but, like, this is just two completely different people to who they were. And I think Cody making a little bit of a dig at WWE, but not, like, obviously not coming out and saying this isn't WWE, but, like, talking about the other company, I think it's kind of smart to have little digs like that, because it makes AEW feel different and feel cool for a lot of people who are disenfranchised with WWE at the moment.
You know, the other thing that's clever about it is that, you know, when we watch Retro Raw and Retro SmackDown, one of the things that I always like is, you know, the big kind of, like, the big chaotic brawls and stuff like that. And one of the things they used to do really well was people would have backup that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Kane would come out and help DX because he was with X-Pac or whatever. And when Cody had all the people, they all made sense. All the people that came out
and
helped him
made sense. Yeah,
everyone
that showed up. I mean, I popped for DDP's music. I really did.
Who knew? Like, who knew?
I got so excited.
There was a tweet from a guy called Andy Murray, not obviously the tennis player, but he works for What Culture, and he wrote a tweet that I just thought was worth reading out, and it said, WWE's top babyface cowers in a corner to avoid a fight with a wacky murder clown. AEW's top babyface literally puts his fist through a window to engage in a fight with the worst dickhead in the world, night and day. And
it's a good point, because I mean, they're making Cody feel valiant. They're making him feel good. Like, I think where WWE fails a lot of the time is they feel like babyfaces just have to be nice and they have to be stupid, right? Like, WWE babyfaces often come across as stupid or naive, and that's why heels get cheered, because they're more interesting. Cody is fucking interesting here. He's a badass. Like, he looks awesome.
And the thing is, it's like Jericho, what people don't realize that he's doing is that Jericho is one of the only wrestlers where he has all the cool catchphrases, he gets you to buy his t-shirts, he's very, very popular, but when he is confronted with a babyface, he gets you to side with a babyface.
Mm-hmm. That just shows how good he is at his job.
That's the art. That's wrestling. If you do
it
well.
And he's managing to do this too. Like, I think it's very weird. Like, I feel like this is just like the Chris Jericho praise hour, which I'm not really want to do very often. But like, Chris Jericho's doing all of this without taking anyone else down too. Like, you can tell, like, if you look at the difference between Chris Jericho here and say, like, when Steve Austin was on top in Retro Raw time, right? Cause that's an easy comparison, cause we're watching both. Like, when Steve Austin is on top in Retro Raw time, he has to kind of put everyone else down to stay at the top of his game and to, like, stay where he is. And he was very paranoid about keeping his spot. Whereas I think, like, in Retro Raw time and Retro SmackDown, like, we're seeing The Rock kind of build more people up, and I think Chris Jericho is managing to do this with, like, he is building new stars on the way. Like, I'm not saying that Chris Jericho's slowing down, because he's 50 now? 49?
I think he's just turned 48.
48 something? He's in his upper 40s, right? Like, he's
48 years old.
He's 48 years old, and he's still incredible. Like, he does not look like he should be out of the ring. He absolutely belongs in there. Like, whatever magic fountain of whatever he's drinking is working. But he does have fewer years left on his career than he has behind him, right? I think that that's fair to say. And he knows he's not going to be able to do this forever. Like, he doesn't want to go out there and wrestle a match in Saudi Arabia if he can't wrestle, right? Like, Chris Jericho's not someone who wants to go out there and do a shitty job. So I think he's smart enough that he knows that, like, it makes sense to build other people up. And he's Chris Jericho. Like, he's kind of untouchable. He's going to be okay. He's not, like, fighting for a spot. He's like, I have my spot. It's pretty solidified.
But even at the end, he was going, I have a ticket. I paid to be here.
You know, my gosh, sniveling Chris Jericho in the concourse, like almost getting down to his knees, being like, it was brilliant though, right? It was brilliant. And I think it's interesting watching 1999 Chris Jericho versus this Chris Jericho because they're the same person. Like, over-exaggerated facial expressions, but he's learned to harness it over the past 20 years. Like, he's learned to put it to such great effect. Whereas in 1999, I feel like he's almost a little too over the top and over dramatic, and it didn't quite work, and it made him just kind of feel like, I don't know, like a guy playing wrestler sometimes. Like, now he's so good. Everything he does is so, it's disgusting how good he is at his job.
Disgusting how great he is. So then we had Best Friends versus the Young Bucks with Orange Cassidy on the outside. He does a bit of like his, you know, low impact stuff on them, and then they just blast him with a double superkick. And then Young Bucks end up getting the win over Best Friends, and then accept the challenge of Santana and Ortiz. This was a good match for Best Friends and Young Bucks, but I'm glad that Young Bucks have accepted the Santana Ortiz challenge, because that match at Full Gear should be great.
It should be really great. I thought Best Friends were really good here, though, too. Like, I know that I'm a big fan of Best Friends anyway, but I don't know. I really, really liked this. There was something about it that clicked. It was kind of like Cameron Grimes and Matt Riddle on NXT for me, where, like, Best Friends have been interesting to people like me who know them, but I feel like they're starting to become more characters, more, like, enveloped in the fabric of AEW, if that makes sense. And I want more of it. And their entrance video is still my favorite thing in the entire world.
It was fun.
And I think Orange Cassidy being on the outside and having a couple spots, like, being used to great effect here. Like, I love Orange Cassidy with Best Friends. The Gentleman's Club being reunited still just gives me all the warm, fuzzy feelings. But I think he's working. He's working as a character.
It's smart.
I think it's great.
It's smart to, you know, it's like, don't overdose you on it. Like, feed it in slowly but surely. And they're doing it the right way. Then we got Britt Baker, who is obviously the hometown girl, against Jamie Hayter, who is apparently in Stardom. Are you familiar with her?
I've heard the name. I haven't really seen her wrestle a whole bunch, but I've heard the name and heard positive accolades, and I thought that they were well-deserved because I really liked her here.
So Britt Baker has this match with Jamie Hayter. I'm not going to pretend to you like this match was even a patch on Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair. It was like a different universe.
Not.
But, you know, they did have the hometown girl. They gave it a big win in her hometown, and the crowd were really behind Britt Baker. So,
And they did mention on commentary, I think Tony Schiavone mentioned when Jamie Hayter came out, that she tags Bea Priestley.
Yeah, so there's an end story there, because Bea Priestley's obviously feuding with Britt Baker.
Yeah, but that made a little more sense to me.
But even though the match wasn't great, the story is that if you're a WWE fan and you live in Oklahoma and you've been to like three shows where they embarrass JR or whatever, like, they're teaching you here, if we come to somebody's hometown, like, come and see your hometown person, come and support them. And that's it's a smart thing to show what you do that the other people do not do. And I'm aware that I said do.
You did, and it made me giggle. Yeah, because they had a whole video package about Britt Baker beforehand, like supporting the Steelers and doing other Pittsburgh things. I'm not all that familiar with Pittsburgh. I apologize to anyone from there. But yeah, it was kind of cool to see the presentation. I feel like they want Britt Baker to be a bigger star than Britt Baker comes across as on AEW. So I'm still just a little bit lukewarm on her. Like, I don't know that she should be like top tier as much as they've been pushing her. But like, again, I've seen her live and she's great. Like, she is very good. So I don't know why it's not clicking for me as well in AEW. I don't know if it's just the comparison and maybe like I'm just not enamored with their women's division in general, because I don't know, it hasn't really gelled together and felt like a fully formed thing yet. And maybe that would help. I'm just not sure. But I mean, it was a good example of people getting behind their hometown girl, and the crowd was hot for it because, you know, she's from there and you like to cheer people that are from where you're from. I'm a sucker for it, personally.
Yeah, I like it. And then we got the weird thing where backstage, Jamie Hayter was going to get an interview, and then Brandy just comes in and bashes her head in and then just, like, doesn't say anything and walks away. I was intrigued by that, because Brandy has said online that she's no longer going to be going to the ring with Cody, so we're seeing some development for her.
I'm interested. Like, I'm interested in the development, but like, does this, I'm just confused about what it means though, because it seemed like a total dick move. Like, it seemed very heelish for her to just come backstage and deck someone. But like, Jamie Hayter's also a heel because she teams with Bea Priestley and she was against like their, you know, one of their big baby faces in Britt Baker. So I'm just not really sure what Brandy is supposed to be at this point. And I don't know. Like, it just left me more confused than intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's good to give her a story, and I hope they. I mean, I like the idea of them not having her be with Cody anymore, and now it's like, where's she going to go? What's her motivations? And also, does that mean Awesome
Yeah,
Kong's
that's
coming?
totally fine. And I hope that we get to hear more about her motivations, and I hope we get to hear more about her motivations on the actual show and not just on the YouTube stuff, because I have gotten way behind on the YouTube stuff, and I don't think that I should have to watch the YouTube stuff in order to understand the stories. That's like one of the criticisms I have of AEW is, I mean, we were just talking about it before. I think that they don't give you enough background info on some of their characters.
That's
If they
fair.
did like a Britt Baker style video package for more people. I mean, you can't do it for everyone, but like that made me think, oh, okay, she's hometown, she's a dentist, she's, you know, like it let you get to know Britt Baker a little bit more. Like, I don't understand who Brandy is right now
Yeah,
in the AEW landscape.
and they need to address that.
Yeah.
Main event was Pac versus Jon Moxley. The match ends up going 12 minutes, which it went to a TV limit draw. What do you think of the idea of a TV of a time limit draw with TV time remaining? We hear Moxley after it say TV time limit my ass. They had a really good match, and you know either of them losing probably wouldn't have been the best thing, but you know it's a fair thing to sort of say, should we criticize them for it? Should we compliment them for it? Where do you sit?
Well, I think AEW has established themselves as a company that adheres to time limits, right? We've seen two time limit draws now. We saw Cody versus Darby Allin, and now Jon Moxley versus Pac. And I love it. Like, I am a proponent of a time limit draw. I think it's great. I remember JR said on a podcast like years ago when I was listening to his podcast fairly regularly, he was like, if you have time limits in a match, that's another possible finish. Right, like that adds to your arsenal of storytelling, and I think it's good because it didn't come across as like a bullshit disqualification or anything like that to me. I think because I'm a fan of time limits in general, it like I'm more willing to grant this sort of thing than like just a stupid disqualification with a chair for no reason, because this is it works within the rules of the world. Like it's fine with me. I
I guess you
understand
also
that.
have to sell it to, if it's going to be a thing, you kind of have it happen so that people know that it
Yeah.
could be a thing. So if it happens
And it's helping
enough.
to establish their world a little bit more and their rules, which I think is good. So like I don't mind this at all because I would love to see them fight again. I thought what they did here was great. Like it's insane to me. I really enjoy watching Jon Moxley wrestle, and I hated watching Dean Ambrose wrestle. And you wouldn't think that like wrestling-wise they would be so different, but they are. And it's not like Jon Moxley was doing tons of crazy hardcore stuff here. He feels unleashed and he feels like an interesting person. So yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this. I love them both. I think they're both fantastic. I would like to see more of this, right? And I think a time limit draw extends a feud, or, you know, Moxley was pissed off that they didn't get to finish the match. I would like to see them finish the match someday. Like, it makes me want to see more of it. So it does work for me. I know that I'm sure a lot of people who are not as big a fan of time limits as me probably aren't as happy. Was there backlash to this? Again, I was offline like
I
for
think
2 days.
I think there was just kind of some people liked, some people didn't. I'm not really. I think that if you use it and it's now and then, as long as you're not using it consistently to get out of something, then I think it's fine. And I don't think they've done that yet. So I think the two times they've done it that I remember, which is Cody and Darby, and this one, it's worked both times. So as long
I
as it
think it
only,
worked to advance stuff both times, and it didn't just feel like a cop
yes,
out.
if it happens like multiple times, if it happens more than like 5 times a year, then I think it's too much. But I think if you use it sparingly, it works. So I need to run because I've got something on. So I think AEW is also a thumbs up show. You?
Oh yeah, thumbs up. Loved it.
All the usual stuff, patreon.com/insidetheropes for bonus content, retro stuff, current stuff, Finn stuff, youtube.com/insidetheropes for interview content with Edge. Ali's going up this weekend, loads and loads of stuff. Insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets for Mick Foley in December and Kenny Omega in April. Who is going to play us out, Sandra?
I think we should play. Breezango's theme kind of sucks, so not them. Let's play Finn Balor's theme.
He turned heel. Now we all love him. The irony of 2019 wrestling. Here's Finn Balor, everybody. Bye.
Bye.